Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write, it's also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true, people. It's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and writing life, as well as video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. Who's up there right now? Dori Hillestad Butler is our current victim. She's up there, wonderful children's book writer. Of course, all the interviews we do are all, they're still up there. Everything's live in archives or back pages. So check them all out. Everyone from Lee Child to Amy Tan to Nora Ephron to Andre DeBuse to Cheryl Strayed. Oh my God, so many interviews, all there on Author Magazine. Go check it out. We're also funded by the wonderful Pacific Northwest Writers Association. They've been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. I am happy to be a part of that organization. They put on a great conference every year. You can already sign up for it. Yes, you can. The earlier you sign up, the cheaper it is, the more agents and editors you get to pitch if you're into that sort of thing, and I know a lot of you are. But we also do classes there. If you're in the Northwest and you want to take part, well, I'll be teaching a couple classes. Yes, I will. The Art of the Personal Essay, one of my favorite ways to communicate with other people. I'll be teaching that in January, as well as a one-day workshop in fearless writing. Yes, another one of my favorite things. Check it out. There'll be some other classes. Pam Binder's teaching some classes in commercial fiction writing. It's all there at pnwa.org. Well, listen, people, here it is, December 18th. It's my last show of 2018. I'm going to take a couple weeks off for the holidays. I just bought my Christmas tree today. I have a family. We do everything. We light the menorah. We do it all. We do the Christmas tree. So today we got the tree. We're going to decorate it. We're going to do the whole thing. My mom's coming into town. My son's coming. So anyway, I'm going to be busy. But I'm not too busy to talk to Bo Lamour. That's our guest today. Bo is a writer and an entertainment industry jack of all trades, and he's also, as you probably guessed by his name, son of best-selling novelist Louis Lamour, and has managed his father's literary estate since 1988. 30 years, I just did the math. Striving to maintain his legacy, he has done editorial work. He's revised unfinished manuscripts. Interesting. Managed a literary magazine and an audio radio drama series. He's done art direction. Good Lord. Been a comic book writer and producer, become an expert in marketing. I could always use more advice about that. In the years since his father passed away, Lamour has helped sell over 120 million books, nearly 5 million audio programs, and placed a number of books of short stories out of the 16 posthumous collections on a bestseller list. Wow, that's a lot of stuff. Bo, how you doing?
Pretty good. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Glad to be spending it here with you. Man, that is quite a list of things you do. Let's see, where do we start? I mean, you've been managing your dad's estate since 1988. That's a long time. So here's why. This is what's interesting to me about this, Bo, is that I interview tons of authors, and I know a lot of them. Very few of them were raised by people, by other writers. There's right. a couple, but not many. And in fact, there aren't many people on this planet who are raised by writers. There just aren't that many of us, at least working writers. So let's start with that. I'm just out of curiosity, that the view of the writer from the child, what was that like being raised by someone who was professionally creative?
Dad sat in a little room and typed all day.
Yeah.
I mean, no,
sounds familiar.
We got to travel to some interesting, to some interesting places and get out in the wilderness and things like that. But, I had a friend whose dad was an airline pilot. And of course, back in the 1960s, that was really exciting.
Oh, yeah.
It's like my dad, he could have been writing anything. I mean, he could have been, who knew what he was typing in there. In fact,
right.
that's been one of the questions that has kept us going for 30 years. But regardless, unlike the lives of some authors, there wasn't a lot of drama in our house. There wasn't.
Well, that's good.
A bunch of,
that's nice.
You know,
so he was a pretty good dad.
Anything of that sort. So it was
he wasn't throwing bottles of whiskey at your head or anything.
No.
Okay. Well, good. Good. But you know, so my wife's a writer. I'm a writer. My kids, one of my boys wants to be a tele. He's about to come down to LA actually to write for television. He's going to pursue that dream here shortly. So they were raised by a couple creative people, and my wife and I talk about sort of the creative, just what it is to make stuff and the challenges of it fairly regularly. Did he ever talk to you about that? You know, it's just sort of the, what you go through looking at a blank page and thinking, how do I want to fill this up?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, we heard about, he would tell us what he was working on and how he was doing with it and things like that. It probably wasn't as clear or instructive in a literal manner as you might expect, because by the time I was born, Dad had kind of taught himself to write almost directly from his unconscious.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, an awful lot like an improv comedian would work.
Yep. Yep.
And so there were aspects of what he did that he didn't understand necessarily all that well, and he didn't want to.
Right. Right. So he was not an outliner.
Yeah, what he knew how to do was turn it on, and once he got it on, it was very effective at making the story come out. Yeah. And to intellectualize too much about the process after that point was detrimental to the process.
Yeah. He's not alone in that. A lot of people who write are able to write quickly and are able to, you know, produce a lot of stuff. They don't want to tinker with it. You know, they know how to, as you say, turn it on. Something comes out, and if they start talking about it, they're afraid they're going to just totally screw it up.
Exactly.
And to our listeners, you know what I'm talking about. Some of you probably write quickly. Some of you don't. Some of you aren't writers. But there is a sense of like, who is it? One of my favorite interviews I did recently was with James Lee Burke, the novelist James Lee Burke. And he said something, you know, he's 83 or whatever he is now, 84. He's written, I don't know how many crime novels. And he said, I knew he didn't outline, he didn't, you know, I could tell in about two paragraphs, he just let it rip. And he said, he was the first writer who really was clear, like, you don't know where this stuff comes from. And if you think you do it by yourself, you're nuts and you can't. So just make peace with whatever your God is and understand what's going on there. Does that make sense to you?
It does. I mean, I know the most particular thing about my dad and this sort of process was he was always afraid to stop. He didn't want to let it go for too many days because that, I mean, I know this from my own experience too. That doorway shrinks.
You don't want to
close it and leave it closed for too long because your natural inclination or the natural inclination of your unconscious is to not open up.
Oh, and interesting.
So
yeah.
He didn't like to leave it for very long. He wrote virtually every day.
And so for you, so you took over as a state in 88, but what were your own ideas about? Were you interested in writing? Were you like, I don't want anything to do with it. That's his thing. I want to do my own thing. Like, what was your relationship to it growing up?
I actually didn't see myself working in his business exactly, and I don't work in his business exactly. I mean, what I do is writing mixed with all kinds of technical operations.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I initially thought that I wanted to be a film director and then more specifically a television writer and producer, and I did a little bit of that. But I was very happy to move on to publishing.
So, did that start when you took over his estate?
I think I got more focused on the publishing stuff at that point. I had been doing some of it. Then I was doing a lot of art directing of Dad's covers already when he passed away, and I was also producing our dramatized audio publishing program. Back in those days, we did no single voice read audios. Everything that we did
really?
Was scripted with a big cast and like an old-time radio show.
Was that typical? Because, I mean, I've listened to a few books on tape, but these are all, you know, relatively recently produced. Was that typical for the, like, 70s and 80s?
I think when the business first kind of really came into its own in the mid-1980s, I suspect that everybody in the business tried that a couple of times. And
okay.
We were lucky enough in that we produced 6 shows a year for, I don't know, 8 or 9 years, and then we
really?
Dropped down to 4. And then we went to mostly doing single voice readings, but
right.
I produced what will probably be, I hope it isn't, but I fear it will probably be our last drama about 3 years ago.
God, this is so cool. So you would produce, and so would you have a narrator, or was it primarily just dialogue and sound effects? Did you have music? Did you do the whole thing like a radio show?
Well, I always tried to make them like a very updated version of a radio show. So a lot of my background is in post-production in motion pictures.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, the sound design thing comes very easily to me. And so what the last 2 shows that we did, Son of a Wanted Man and The Diamond of Jeru, were both film scripts that I wrote. The Diamond of Jeru actually was a film that was made, I did for USA Cable, and then we did it again as an audio.
Awesome.
And so, you know, I would adapt those scripts to the audio format. They would have a narrator plus sound effects and everything like that. And
yeah.
we have our own composer, and we do our own music and casts of, you know, I don't know, those. I think The Diamond of Jeru was 16 or 17, and Son of a Wanted Man was 22.
Wow.
So
that sounds
a lot
cool.
of actors, yeah.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And so you sent me a package of stuff, all these great books, including No Traveler Returns, which is a book where I guess you took some of your father's stuff and added to it, completed it. Talk a little bit about that book, if you could.
No Traveler Returns was an unfinished novel. It was my dad's first novel. Was written between 1938 and 1942. And like a lot of first novels, it was very ambitious. And
yeah.
It was probably too ambitious for him at the time.
Right.
And he alternated working on it with writing short stories, which, of course, he could get out much more quickly, and he could get a paycheck for much
right.
more quickly. And so, you know, it was written in fits and spurts, and was, because it was so complicated, kind of disorganized. But there was a very, very interesting story there, a story he couldn't finish because he was drafted into World War II,
right.
finally. And then when he came back, the professional requirements on him were much higher. But before the war, he was living with his parents in a little house in Oklahoma. After the war, he was supporting himself and trying to make a living here in Hollywood. And so he was dedicated at first to the short story business. He was trying to write 50 stories a year when he came back. And then he converted that business to writing paperback originals, but he was trying to write 3 or 4 paperback originals
right.
every year. So he never got
yeah.
back to it. And,
right.
And you know, I've been aware of it my entire life. I've, you know, before I even started working on it, I probably read it 15, 20 times.
Really?
And then there
Seriously?
Was a, oh yeah. And there was a moment where he just snapped into focus. And I said, wait a minute, behind everything, I know what he's trying to. I know what he's trying to do here. This is one of those stories about kind of all people being connected. And when I got that, and then we had a project which I'll need to describe for you in just a moment, the Lost Treasures project. But we had a project that it fit perfectly into. It's kind of the centerpiece of. And so this was clearly the time for it. And so I had to do quite a bit of, you know, quite a bit of writing on it. But when I write as my dad, I always put more of him in the story. So I'm so familiar with his life and the things he was interested in and stuff of that sort that, you know, I'll take pieces of him that even he didn't put into something. And weave them into the, you know, weave them into the story to flesh it out. So it was a lot of fun.
Wow. It sounds like you were as interested in that book, maybe even more interested in it than he was. I imagine he kind of said, well, I'm off. I've found my voice. I've found my genre. I found my, and away he went, you know, 400 books or whatever it was later. Right. But it sounds like that book, for some reason, stuck in your imagination maybe more than it did in his.
Well, it's a way of, you know, it's a way of kind of finding him and interacting with him. And I mean, it isn't every day you get a chance to co-write something with your dad 30 years after his death, which is incredible. And it's also a very, very personal novel. There's a lot of him in it, probably more of his personality and his history in this book than certainly any of his Westerns.
You mentioned his lost treasures. Talk about that. So, because he was one prolific dude, and not all of it could get published. Not all of it found the light of day.
Right. So, a few years ago, we started this particular series of books. It's called Louis L'Amour's Lost Treasures, and the first element of it is I'm taking about 40 of Dad's well-known novels that were published, you know, back when he was alive.
Right.
And I'm going back into them, and I'm writing a special postscript, which is like the bonus features or the story behind the story.
Right.
Or whatever interesting things that I know about that, you know, about that particular story. So sometimes it'll be about him doing research, if that's what I know about that story. Sometimes it will be about the making of the movie, because occasionally that was kind of a dramatic aspect to these things. Sometimes it'll be, you know, sometimes I will have different beginnings of what, you know, he would start the story one way, but that's not actually the way he finally wrote the novel. So I'll look at that and discuss why, and then why he put it down and why he went back to work on it. And I'll look through his correspondence and notes that he made to himself and his journal entries and try to decode everything that I can for the audience about, you know, what was going on. It is, you know, I'm basically going through Louis as an author, his papers, and I'm deciphering them for the audience in relationship to each of these works. So that's the first element. The second element is two volumes of called Louis L'Amour's Lost Treasures, Volume 1 and Volume 2. And those are unfinished works and things that Dad didn't sell for one reason or another during his life. So there's a couple of finished short stories in there. There's a number of movie treatments. There's all kinds of stuff like that. And so those continue the story of Louis's professional life. If you want to look at this whole project, it's really like the professional biography of Louis L'Amour as related to the individual stories. And so in Volumes 1 and Volume 2, one of the fascinating things that appear in those stories is, and I didn't have any idea of this until I started really working in, on this project and thinking about it, what a writer cannot finish is the most defining material in their lives. The stuff that's too ambitious for someone, or I shouldn't say necessarily too ambitious, but the most ambitious thoughts they have, the ones that exceed their ability, are the really real, the things where you can really see to the core of who they are and what they want to do and what their dreams are.
Right.
And so, you know, only about a third of the material in Lost Treasures 1 and 2 is Western, and some of it is particularly odd Western. I mean, there's a, it starts out with a Western horror story. That's the first story in Volume 1. And then the third element is No Traveler Returns. So I have a rule that at least until now, I don't finish anything of my dad's that I didn't understand the trajectory of. So back in the 90s and the early 2000s, there were a number of books or short stories that came out where I released a number of, a pretty good number of dad's short stories that had never been published. And many of those I worked on in the same in-depth manner that I worked on No Traveler Returns.
Right.
But I don't finish something if I don't know where dad was going with it. And the material, you know, for better or for worse, the material in Lost Treasures 1 and 2 is material that I did not know what the true trajectory of it is. Although, in each, when I present each one of these unfinished stories or treatments or whatever it is, I do the same thing that I do with the novels, is I'll write a commentary section where I basically say, this is what I think Louis was trying to do with this story, and here is some evidence, here's a letter he wrote to somebody, here's a journal entry, you know, and he was going in this direction, and it seemed like he wanted to end it like this, so we kind of know, we have a pretty good idea of where the story might have been going, that kind of...
Let me ask you something. So, I'm a son, and I'm a father, and so I've looked at this relationship from both sides, and I guess my question is, like, what's this like? Does it get weird? Is it ever strange for you? Because you're so intimately wrapped up with your dad's stuff. How is that? Like, just emotionally, it's just a guy trying to
It's like he's still around.
You like that. You like that element. Some people be like, leave me alone. I got to get on with my life. But you miss the guy a little, and maybe you're so glad he's around.
Yeah, no. And you also have to recognize that for those same 30 years, for even longer than that, because I started doing this when I started working with the dramatized audios.
Right.
When I do a project like this, I make it mine.
Right.
You know, it's an expression of me as much as it's an expression of anybody else's. I mean, you know, if Lawrence of Arabia can be accepted as being an expression of Robert Bolt, the screenwriter.
Right.
Okay. And I don't think anyone can doubt that it is.
Right.
You know, just because it was drawn from historical sources and the Seven Pillars of Wisdom and things like this, you know, that doesn't mean that Robert Bolt was not involved in the process.
Right.
And that it wasn't an expression of him too. And so, I don't see any difference here.
That, you know, I think that's great, and it reminds me of best filmmakers who turn books into movies wisely. I mean, Kubrick was one great example of that. Know to make it their own thing. They love the book, but you can't make the book. if you make a movie,
right.
Because movies have a very different, it's a visual medium, it's not a verbal medium, and so it's just among other things. And so those artists know to make it their own. It sounds like that's what you're doing. You're saying, I've got to translate it through my own imagination, my own desires, my own interests, et cetera. Good
for you. I've had a wonderful, I've been able to do dramatized audio, which is crazy. I mean, I've done 60 of those.
So cool.
And you know, this is something that nobody gets an opportunity to do these days. I've been able to do motion pictures. I've been able to do a comic book. I've been able to do all kinds of fun stuff. So it's been a riot, actually.
And it sounds like, I mean, you must like the fact that, because, you know, so your dad was a writer, but so he would get up every day, plunk himself down in front of his typewriter, I'm sure, there are no computers, and just, that's what he did. I mean, he just wrote stories every day. That's it. And, but you do a lot of different stuff. You got your hands in all kinds of different things. Do you like that variety? Does that excite you?
I love it. I really, really like getting into the technical aspects of things, whether it is, you know, how to record sound effect or, you know, or it's how to present a book like Louis L'Amour's Lost Treasures, you know, in exactly which fonts, which was an enormous discussion.
Okay.
And so, like I said, I get involved in a lot of technical aspects of it.
Yeah.
When we did the comic book, I spent 2 years on the phone with the artist probably every third day. And discussing exactly what the next set of panels was going to look like. At the same time, when, you know, my dad could write directly and without worry or hesitation from his unconscious.
Right.
And I can sometimes get like that, but every time I take on the technical aspect of a project, you know, like I said earlier, that door shrinks and it is horrible getting it back open again.
Yeah, you do. It's a muscle. You got to keep working it.
Exactly.
You got to keep working. It's true. Yeah, I tell my students who write book-length projects, it's like, do it 5 days a week, because you have to. It takes a while just to start the engine up. And if you write 5 days a week at least, you kind of, it keeps working in your subconscious even when you're not writing. But if you let it go about 3 or 4 or 5 days, then you got to find it all over again, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's a good thing to do. Well, Bo, this has been very, very interesting. I'm not through with you just yet.
Sure.
But you've got quite the internet empire. So if people want to learn about you, use BoLamour.com. But also, The Lost Treasures has its own website too. Is that right?
That is correct.
And so it's just
LostTreasures.com.
Okay. And so they can find out about you there or at your own website. But okay. So, but I've got one more question for you before I turn you loose. What I'd like you to do is finish this sentence. If writing, I know that's one of the things you do. So if writing has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
Oh, gosh, it must be discipline. You know, it's the discipline to keep that door open. It's the discipline to keep your butt in the seat. You know, the first thing you need to do is put your butt in the seat.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not going to happen till you do that, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So it's taught you some discipline. Were you undisciplined before you wrote, or has it just made you more disciplined?
No, I like to, like I said earlier, I kind of like to do a lot of different things. And those things can be very creative, but they can also be kind of distracting.
Yeah. Well, Bo, congratulations on all the stuff you're doing. It's just awesome. Keep having fun. Keep putting out those stories. The world never is... There can never be too many great stories in the world, so keep putting them out there.
I will do my best. Thank you.
Oh, all right. Take it easy, Bo. Have a nice holiday.
Mm-hmm, you too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, everybody. That was fun. That was a lot of fun. Yes, I will be off for a couple of weeks, so go do whatever you do. If you have something you're going to go do, have a good new year, et cetera. Jeff, thank you. It's great. My producer, RJ Jeffries, always great to have you there. So until next year, go do something you love.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.